Hello, welcome and kumusta. Thank you for joining me. This is Hal, your occupational therapist, and welcome to OT Conversations. In this episode, let's talk about a case of cervical radiculopathy. Let's talk about the case of Mr. John Smith. He's 42 years old. And he is an office worker. Let's call him a data analyst. He has a history of mild hypertension. He also has a history of occasional back pain. When he was seen by the doctor, John presents to the clinic with a 3-week history of neck pain that radiates down his right arm. And this pain is accompanied by numbness and tingling of the thumb and the index finger. He was also reporting that there's weakness when he's gripping objects and occasional wrist instability as well. His symptoms get worse with prolonged work with computer. And when he's looking down at his phone, but whenever he's resting, it relieves it. On clinical examination, Mr. Smith's range of motion, particularly on the neck, was restricted. More, you can observe this restriction on extension and the right lateral flexion as well. On Sperling's test, it was positive. What happens is it reduces the radiating pain when the head is tilted and is compressed toward the affected side as well. Sperling's test, it was positive. And what it does is the tingling and the radiating pain is reproduced when the head is tilted and compressed towards the affected side. He's got some motor deficits. It's mild weakness in the wrist extension and elbow flexion as well. And when it comes to some of the sensory findings, there is decreased sensation in the thumb and index finger, particularly on the C6 dermatomal region. We checked on the reflexes. There's diminished brachioradialis reflex, and there is normal biceps and triceps reflex as well. He had a primary diagnosis of cervical radiculopathy, which is likely C6 nerve root. Now, the doctor's initial management plan was there were some concerns. The pain, and this was managed using NSAIDs and heat therapy. There was some activity modification as well, particularly with ergonomic workstation adjustments. That limits the neck flexion. Physiotherapists are working on cervical stabilization exercises and some nerve gliding techniques, while the occupational therapy focused on postural training. There were some adaptive strategies for work tasks and some energy conservation techniques. There you go. Here's the case of radiculopathy. So the question is, what is radiculopathy? It's like ridiculous, isn't it? What is radiculopathy? It is a condition that is caused by the compression, caused by the irritation or inflammation of a spinal nerve or the nerve of the spinal nerve, so spinal nerve root. And when there is this inflammation, or when there is this compression, it can lead to pain. On severe cases, you can have weakness, you have numbness, or you can have tingling that radiates along the pathway of the nerve. It commonly occurs because of conditions like herniated discs, some conditions like spinal stenosis. If you have bone spurs that are sticking out, particularly as a person gets older, that happens as well. or some degenerative disc disease as well. Particular to the case, some of the symptoms will be dependent on the affected nerve root. For example, you can have pain, weakness, numbness on the shoulders, the arms, the hands, and the fingers. If that is the scenario, then where is the root? Where is the origin of this? It's likely going to be on the cervical region, the cervical radiculopathy. That's the neck region. Now, another one would be pain, numbness, and weakness of the lower back, the buttocks, the legs, and the feet. This now is originating from the lumbar region. And most of the time, people are calling it sciatica, but it is lumbar radiculopathy. Now, it's less common. Another scenario is where you can have a pain around the chest or the abdomen. And this is the thoracic radiculopathy, which is the mid-back region. When it comes to treatment, physical therapy should be the treatment because it's a physical problem. So pain, physical problem, physical symptoms, physical therapy. Or if you want to call it physiotherapy. So that's one. You can have medications. You can have steroids, because steroids are anti-inflammatory. Or, in the very, very severe case, you may need, or a person may need to have surgery. And the mechanism for radiculopathy happens when, like I said earlier on, when there is a compression on the nerve root and it gets irritated. And when the nerves gets irritated, it leads to dysfunction of the affected nerve. And the mechanism involves a few processes. You can have compression, or you can have irritation of the nerve root. And this happens particularly when the spinal nerves, at the site where the spinal nerves exit the spinal cord, and so the spinal cord, imagine this, there is a cord in the spine, and then there are some nerves that are coming out. And these are spinal nerves, and they go out through the foramen, or like little spaces in between the spinal column. The column are the bones, and there are small openings in between these columns. And these columns are called intervertebral foramina. Yeah, in between, vertebral, in between the vertebral foramen, like a little hole and opening. And if these openings become narrowed or obstructed, the nerve root then can be compressed, and it can lead to the impairment of this nerve. I can almost feel it. Imagine it's a burning pain. Can be like an electric shock type of pain. Dull, aching. Ooh, it's very painful. So that's one. So when there is a compression or irritation of the nerve root. And when it comes to the nerve root compression, what are the common causes of this? How does the nerve root get compressed? One is through a herniated disc. So if you remember your anatomy, in between the spinal column, there are some discs, and these are the vertebral discs. And in the middle, at the center of this disc, is like a gelatinous substance, and it's called the nucleus pulposus. This is the inner part of the disc. And what happens is this nucleus pulposus can put through the outer layer. And if I remember it correctly, it's annulus fibrosus. So it's a big word, isn't it? And when it comes out, these nucleus pulposus, then that will compress on the nerve root. So there you go. That's one common cause, herniated disc. Another one is these discs. They can have degenerative disease. And how does this happen? There is a thinning of the disc and then it collapses. And when these discs collapse, then it will reduce the space in the intervertebral foramen, and there is narrowing of this foramen. This narrowing of the foramen will then impinge more on the nerve root. Yeah. So that's another reason, a degenerative disc disease. Sometimes, particularly as a person gets older, there are some bone deformation that are sticking out. Osteophytes, it's called. And these overgrowths, particularly from arthritis, it can impinge on these nerve root. Okay. And then there can be a stenosing or spinal stenosis. So there is a narrowing of the spinal canal or the foramina because of the aging, because of thickened ligaments, or just disc degeneration. Another condition is spondylolisthesis. And this is where a vertebra slips out of place and it pinches on the nerve root itself. And then another reason is radiculitis, which is an inflammation. And what happens is, even without the direct compression, inflammation, or from the infection, or because of an autoimmune disease, or there's chemical irritation, this inflammation can cause a nerve root injury or impairment. Okay? So there you go. So some of the other conditions that you would hear that would cause this, yeah? So radiculopathy is the one that is, that's the general term. And then that's, what's the cause is the next thing. You can have herniated disc, you can have degenerative disc changes, bony spurs, spinal stenosis, spondylolisthesis, all orthopedic conditions. Or musculoskeletal conditions. Because it involves the bone, then it is an orthopedic condition. And now let's talk about some of the pathophysiology of the symptoms. So you can have the pain transmission. So how does this happen? So the compression then will disrupt the normal nerve signal conduction, and it leads to a radicular pain that follows the affected nerve's dermatome. So another tip for you guys, dermatomes, it's an essential thing for you to learn. And I believe if you listen to some of my previous podcasts, I've talked about the dermatome. What about the sensory disturbances? When there is compression, then it will affect the sensory fibers of the nerve, and these sensory fibers of the nerve will cause numbness or tingling sensation, and this tingling sensation is called paresthesia, or it can cause hypersensitivity, hyperesthesia, sensory disturbance at the end of the day. You can also have motor dysfunction. How does this take place? Because the motor fibers are affected, and the muscles then that is controlled by the nerve may become weak, and once it gets weaker, it then will not have the motor innervation, then it's going to get smaller. So you can have atrophication of the muscle. And then when the muscle has atrophied, then you can't move it. Yeah, so it's a peripheral nerve injury. And then there are some reflexes as well. So you can have loss of reflexes. So it's called hyporeflexia. And it can happen if the nerve root involved has an associated deep tendon reflex. Okay, so that's some of the pathophysiology of the symptoms. Now, what else do we want to know about this? Ischemia and inflammation. So that's another thing. When it comes to the nerve compression, when there is nerve compression, it can reduce the blood flow, which means there is an ischemia to the nerve root. And when there is no blood flow in the nerve root, then it will cause the nerve irritation. And if it is a long-term problem, then it is a chronic inflammation. So inflammatory mediators like cytokines, prostaglandins, these are all high-level enzymes now, which I won't go into detail. But these inflammatory mediators can further synthesize pain receptors, and then it makes the pain even more, even if the compression is simply mild. Okay. So you have two types of radiculopathy, particularly when it comes to how acute or how chronic it is. Basically, that's what it is. You have acute radiculopathy, you have chronic radiculopathy. An acute one is because of a sudden disc herniation or injury, and this happens, there is sharp, severe pain, the muscle weakness. So when you're asking for the symptoms of this, how long ago did this take place? Has this happened a long time, or is it just an acute one? A chronic one is usually caused by degenerative changes over time, like that leads to persistent but fluctuating symptoms. So that's when you know the nature or the mechanism. Basically, there is a problem, there is numbness, there's tingling, there is pain on the area, on the spinal cord, or the spinal, on the cervical region, or on the lumbar region. Then the question is, when? When did this occur? Because if it did, if it's short distances or like short time frame, then it is acute. Is it because of a sudden change? Is it an injury? But arthritic conditions, you have longer conditions, then you know that it is an overtime, it's a degeneration. Okay. Going back to our case, we talked about the cervical or cervical radiculopathy. So this cervical radiculopathy occurs when the nerve root of the cervical spine, and with the cervical spine, you have 8 nerves, okay? C1 to C8, and any of those are compressed. If they are irritated or they are inflamed, and this can lead to pain, the numbness, the weakness, and altered reflexes in the areas that are, again, supplied by the affected nerve, okay? And these reflexes, pain, so it's pain is dolor, rubor is redness, pallor is paleness, okay? Rubor, did I say that? Redness. So these are all some of the symptoms. Pallor, rubor, dolor. Dolor is pain, yeah? Okay. Now, what happens now? Let's talk about the cervical or cervix. When it comes to the cervical spine, you remember that there are 7 vertebra or vertebrae from C1 to C7, but the nerve roots that would come out would be 8. Okay, from C1 to C8, and in terms of the vertebrae, that's C1 to C7. These nerve roots, as I have discussed earlier on, they exit above their corresponding vertebra. For example, the C6 nerve root will be exiting between C5 and C6. Okay. All right. Just remember that. So C5 is between C4 and C5. C6 is between C5 and C6. Now, these nerves will contribute to the brachial plexus. And we'll talk about the brachial plexus at some point because that's a very interesting plexus. And it's something that we need to learn as well. Okay. And so this brachial plexus controls the movement, all the motor and the sensory functions of the shoulders, the arms, and the hands as well. So anything to do with the hands, since occupational therapists should be an expert of the hands, then you should always remember what these things are. Okay? Right. What are the mechanisms for cervical radiculopathy? Usually it involves compression, it involves irritation of which nerve? Cervical nerve, obviously, due to either herniated cervical disc, that's most common in young adults, or because of a degenerative disc disease, that is, again, usually for elderly people or those, aging. Yeah, you can have aging disc. And why is that? So there is disc dehydration and there's narrowing and it reduces the space for the nerve roots, like I mentioned earlier on. You can have spinal stenosis, cervical spinal stenosis. You can have spondylosis, which is arthritis, and a trauma, like a sudden whiplash injury. Yeah, that one causes that. All right. Now let's talk about some of the common affected nerve roots. The C5 is, common site is C5 would have been between C4 and C5. That's the common site of injury. And when that happens, you will feel some pain and sensory loss on the shoulder and the side of the arm. And there would be weakness on the deltoid and the biceps. And then the reflex would be the biceps reflex. So that's C5. C6, you would have the side of the forearm, the thumb, the index finger. The weakness would be on the biceps and some of the wrist extensors. You can have a weaker biceps and brachioradialis reflex. C6, so C7 will be impinged between C6 and C7. You have the middle finger, dorsal arm. You have the triceps problem, wrist flexors as well. And with this, C7, you have triceps reflex. And then C8, between C7 and T1, you have the ring, pinky finger, medial of the forearm. You can have finger flexors as a problematic site. Hand grip would be impaired. And again, there's not a lot of issues there when it comes to reflexes, because most of the reflexes would be biceps reflex, brachioradialis reflex, and then you have triceps reflex as well. Okay. So what are the features of a cervical radiculopathy? Neck pain. And this neck pain is often worsened by neck movement, especially extension and rotation. So you can have radicular pain as well. You can have sharp burning, radiating pain down the arm. Again, you need to understand and you have to follow the dermatomal pattern of this. You can have numbness and tingling or paresthesia, and it affects specific areas depending. Could be the C6, the middle of the finger, or C7. You can have weakness. Again, this time, rather than the dermatomal region, you can have the myotomal distribution. For example, if somebody has a weak grip, then that would have been more of a C8. And then you have the loss of reflexes as well. So you would have hypotonia or hyporeflexive reflexia. Okay. What are the ways on how we can diagnose this? So a special maneuver that you can do is a test called Sperling's test. And what you do is every time you either make a neck extension or a lateral flexion or downward pressure, it then produces the symptom. And why does that do that? Because these symptoms, these are movements that would narrow the intervertebral foramina where the spinal cords are exiting. Okay. Obviously, you can have MRI, you can have CT scan, and what this does is that it detects the disc herniation, it detects the stenosis, or it can identify the bone spurs that are decompressing or compressing the nerve. Okay. This is now when it becomes more serious, then these would be the line of choice. And then the next thing is you want to a little bit more higher test would be EMG and the nerve conduction study. And in here, it identifies the nerve that is impaired. So electromyogram or the nerve conduction test. Okay, there we go. So, are you guys still with me? This is a little bit slow, isn't it? But, hey, it's keeping you company wherever you are. In terms of treatment, the best thing really is, or when it happens, it's conservative management. Usually within 6 to 12 weeks, you can have NSAIDs, corticosteroids, and this is to reduce the inflammation. You can have physical therapy if they know what they're doing, particularly cervical traction, okay, and strengthening as well. So that's one. And then you can have some lifestyle modification techniques and teachings, which would mean that you'll have to think of activities where you would be avoiding the neck hyperextension. And some form of intervention would be an interventional. And this is now on the medical field. You can have epidural or steroid injections for those inflammation that is persistent. And you can have surgery. If you remove the disc, it's discectomy. If you want to make the foramen bigger, foraminotomy fusion. Foraminotomy. Or sometimes you may have to fuse the spine if there is a severe compression, really. Okay? We should have started with this to begin with. Occupational therapy intervention. What do we do? As you are aware, occupational therapy, we play a very important role in helping individuals with cervical radiculopathy to regain their function and to regain their independence. And we want to manage, we want them to control the pain. So this is health maintenance activity. And you want to prevent further injury. Because this condition involves the arm, the hand, and the neck. The OT will focus on some adaptive strategies. We can do that. We can be teaching them with some ergonomic modifications, and we can provide them with some therapeutic activities as well. Obviously, every time we look after a patient, we have to do some OT functional assessment. We want to find out how this condition is affecting the day-to-day tasks. Always focus on that day-to-day task, particularly with dressing. You have to find a way and technique on how the patients will be able to put on their clothes without exacerbating the condition. So you can have one hand dressing technique style, some techniques when it comes to dressing and grooming, if it involves that, right? So you want to look at their work related tasks like the computer use. So you have to look at that. Writing, their lifting, so moving and handling is something that you need to do. And then you can think about their leisure activities as well, particularly with driving, playing instruments. Are these some things? If they're playing violin, oh, that might hurt it, right? So you may have to do a thorough investigation and thorough analysis of what the person is doing, so which is making the assessment more individualized. To manage the pain, you have to teach a person some activity modification, some techniques that will reduce the stress on the neck and the arms. You teach them how to use the hands instead. Yeah, use two hands instead of one when they're carrying objects, keeping everything centrally as well. You have to avoid prolonged neck flexion, like looking down at the phone when they're doing some of the, when they're all of what's this thing that people do nowadays, checking their phone all the time. So some of the techniques is heat and ice, so contrast temperature as well. So you educate the person how to use heat for muscle relaxation and cold for those inflamed moments. Again, this is all self-management. And you can justify it using health maintenance. Yeah, that's under health maintenance activity. And then the nerve gliding exercises, and you can do this to mobilize the irritated nerve and it reduces compression. So personally, this is a new term for me, these nerve gliding exercises. When I was doing my training, I've not come across this, and I don't know whether this has been something that they've just recently come up with, nerve gliding exercises. Hey, I know tendon gliding, that's for the hands. Again, we'll talk about that at some point. But nerve gliding, something we need to look at for in the future anyway. So occupational therapists should be an expert in ergonomic and postural retraining. So we have to assess the desk and workstation adjustment. The monitor has to be at the eye level, and that's why you want to prevent neck flexion, okay? The keyboard and the mouse should be closer to the body so as the person is not overextending their arms, because when they do, that would be a problem around the shoulder region. And then you have to give them some form of an ergonomic chair with lumbar and cervical support if needed. Sleeping modification. Use cervical pillow, and that would maintain the neck alignment. Sleeping on the back or on the side with proper support as well. So you have to analyze the way they are sleeping. Some form of strengthening and functional exercises. So postural strengthening, where you strengthen the deep neck flexors to support the spine. You want to exercise like chin tucks is something that you need to do. Scapular retractions to maintain good posture as well. Okay, the hand and the arm strengthening, particularly if the arms are affected. So you can have grip strength activities, wrist extension. Okay, you can have fine motor coordination training and practice if there are numbness and weakness that affects the hand function. Okay, so at the end of the day, they will just feel this in the arms. Yeah, if needed, then you may have to teach a person to use adaptive devices and adaptive equipment. You can do splinting or braces. Collar is the one thing, but this is for short term and only on severe cases. So this would limit the movement during the acute pain. You can have wrist or finger splints if there are some weakness that affects the grip as well. Other techniques is you can use voice-to-text software for typing, right? Use modified kitchen utensils if needed. But for a young person, gosh, it'd be very difficult to justify these things. Yeah, but it's there. If the resources is not a problem, you have enough time, you can all explore and really be thorough about this. Patient education and self-management, like I said, health maintenance activities, something that you need to learn. Why? Because it encourages the self-awareness or the awareness of posture and movement habits. So the person needed to be mindful of some activities. You teach them the principle. Principle would be to avoid lateral flexion, avoid neck extension. So you have to identify those activities that will induce these things. Okay, you can educate them with lifestyle changes to prevent recurrence, like weight management, that's something, stress management. If by chance you're working or doing some work hardening and you're doing some vocational rehabilitation, if the patient is struggling with returning to work, then vocational rehab comes into play. And occupational therapists can simulate the work tasks. And then why? Because you want to build in their endurance. So work hardening programs. You can look at the environment, analyze things for the patient, and you can communicate with the employers about some of the adjustments that needed to be done. Okay. You can provide psychosocial support for chronic pain that can lead to frustration, anxiety, and depression. As occupational therapists, then you can set realistic objectives for the patient to regain their function again. And you want some graded exposure to activities just so that the person can build their confidence. Okay. So really, overall, as an occupational therapist, you can help on pain management. Ergonomic training is something that is ours, guys. That's environment. Hey, so you can do that. You can have strengthening exercises. You can have assistive devices, modify intervention, energy conservation techniques. These are all preventative intervention. Workplace modification, again, vocational rehab. Then psychosocial support, where you're tapping onto the affective side of the person. Whoa. There we go. I thought I'd start with a very simple case study. And then in the end, we talked about the wonderful world of radiculopathy, particularly with the cervical type. Okay? We're not going to deal with the lumbar one or the sciatica, but then we can at some point. For now, this is where we finish our session. If you like it and you enjoyed it, talk to your friends about it. Have this discussion over a cup of tea while you're having a break. Learn together and grow together. Just remember, guys, anything you do matters and has an outcome. Until next time, bye.